listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
This is the Pain Pod.
You want to see pain? Look at these.
Welcome to the Pain Pod, the podcast for all things pain management. Hosted by the Pain Guy, Dr. Mark Groffoli. We'll be collaborating with numerous pain management experts, talking about substance usage disorders, the latest treatment modalities, and most important, focusing on the pain of our patients as leading providers of pain care. And now, here's our host, a man wanted in all 50 states, a suburban city-like mountain man,
without the beard,
from the hills of West Virginia, and certified in weapons of mass destruction response, it's Dr. Mark Groffoli.
All right, welcome back everyone to the Pain Pod. We always push the bar up, right? So today, here in this conversation, we're going to be going over what's collectively known as the National Opioid Settlement. Okay, that's basically a lot of courtroom action all across our country, put all together into one. This is not, of course, the end all, because there are those states and particular areas that opted out of that process for the National Opioid Settlement. And then, of course, there's still private entities as well. But, big picture, this is the meat and potatoes, the vast majority of those at the table, okay, for all of us here in America. So to cover the National Opioid Settlement, where do we really begin? But we're going to go over big picture. What actually was the settlement? Pretty good place to start, right? But we'll start there. Who are the characters, the players within this story, right? At least within the settlements. And then we're going to really hone in towards the end, succinctly, of course, but honing in on what comes to the front for controlled substance concerns. Because we've got some more bandwidth and clarity on some specifics when it comes to controlled substance concerns. In the past, or perhaps the present, we've, known those concerns to be things like red flags overall. But we've got a little bit more bandwidth on that. So big picture, and then we'll go over controlled substance concerns. Let's start with the big picture. About $45 billion, okay? That's a lot of money, right? Mucho dinero, about $45 billion. So how did that all, come into play here? So, the big picture, this transgressed over 2021 and 2022. These efforts are happening, within the thick of the COVID era, the COVID pandemic era. It's not like it only happened then. It's a culmination of many years, decades really, negotiations amongst, state attorneys, general representatives, committees and committees, of course, and a lot of lawyers overall. For the national prescription opiate multi-district litigation, right? And of course, got defendants along the way. All of those negotiations were spearheaded or facilitated by Judge Dan Polster. There's a special masters appointed by the MDL, or Multi-District Litigation Court, MDL. And of course, experienced neutral mediators along the way. Again, it's the vast majority of involved entities as far as settlements. But it's not everybody. There's still, private parties, whether it's private individuals, hospitals, insurance companies, so on and so forth along the way, and particular states or even counties or cities along the way. Okay. Now, big picture, 2021 and 2022. So 2021 was when there was about $26 billion settled out. It involved distributors and a manufacturer. So it was the three largest pharmaceutical distributors, McKesson, Cardinal Health, and AmerisourceBergen. And then also the manufacturer of Janssen Pharmaceuticals and its parent company, J&J, Johnson & Johnson. So that's the who's involved there. So distributors collectively would be paying basically, and it's already happening, $21 billion over 18 years. And then Johnson & Johnson would be adding in $5 billion over up to 9 years. So these things are going to be paid out for a good amount of time here. I'm not going to say some time because, you know, that's incredibly unspecific. But hey, we say it all the time, right? All right. So that was 2021. We're up to $26 billion. Then in 2022, when we involve pharmacies and additional manufacturers, that's where the additional about $19 billion came into play. So you got three pharmacy chains, you got CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart, and then two additional manufacturers, Allergan and Teva. So Teva was specifically, it's going to be or is $3.34 billion over 13 years, and to provide either $1.2 billion of its generic version of Naloxone over a decade, or in lieu of that product, almost a $250 million. It was $240 million of cash. So, you know, when you put that together, you get about $3.5 billion. It's actually a little bit more. Then we have Allergan. They were in the books for $2.02 billion over 7 years, and that's the two manufacturers. Then we jump into the pharmacies. CVS, $4.9 billion over a decade. That's a lot, right? Walgreens, $5.52 billion over 15 years. Also a lot, right? And Walmart, $2.74 billion in 2023. So it already happened. But then all payments being made within 6 years overall. You put all that together and, you know, you've got pretty much it was about $13 billion about from the pharmacies. And then about five and a half or so from those two manufacturers. So you put all of it together for all the distributors, all the manufacturers, and all the pharmacies, and you're looking at about $45 billion. Okay. What are we going to do with it, though? Right. You know, actions are already out there happening within our states. Big picture, though, it is stated that at least, so minimally, 85% of the funds are going to go directly to participating states and various subdivisions within for abatement of the opioid epidemic. Yeah, or maybe opioid crisis, but that's what they said, right? The overwhelming bulk of the proceeds are restricted to funding future abatement efforts by state and local governments. Okay. So basically the idea is to not get stuff lost in the shuffle, not primarily just to attorney fees, not to paperwork fees, it's looking to impact lives, right? Isn't that what we want? Right. So in addition to that $45 billion bucks, There's some changes that have been imposed along the way. So the distributors collectively really are going to create a groundbreaking clearinghouse, which they're going to have to require to account for basically all their shipments, right? But all of them, you know, even of other distributors as well, not even involved. You know, the aim is to detect, stop, and report suspicious opioid prescription orders. But again, that's on the healthcare supply chain, not on the illicit supply chain, right? All right. So Johnson & Johnson, which by the way, they ceased marketing prescription opioids about a decade ago and stopped even the providing of prescription opioids about 4 or 5 years ago. They're basically saying they're not going to do any of that over the next decade, right? All right. Teva and Allergan have also agreed to really strict limitations on their marketing, promotion, sale, and distribution of prescription opioids with a couple bans along the way as well. Okay. That's big picture. But now for the pharmacies, the three pharmacies within this national opioid settlement, you got Walmart, CVS, and Walgreens again, right? All being required to implement changes in how they handle prescription opioids, including requirements addressing their compliance structures, right? that whole division of companies. Pharmacist Judgment, Diversion Prevention, Suspicious Order Monitoring, and Reporting on the Red Flag Processes, and as well as blocked and potentially problematic prescribers being identified. So a process for all this, more to come on that. Okay, so that's a big picture of right here hitting home for us pharmacists, but you know, for everyone overall. You know, in talking about that $45 billion, again, approximately, there was an attorney fee fund set up that basically helped put in a bank, a sub bank, for a little bit over a half a billion bucks for attorney fee payments. So that's, you know, big picture here going over everything. The terms of all of this, the national opioid settlement, are effective right now and in the recent past until August 15th, 2032. So the idea is getting everything set up and implemented and then hopefully going into perpetuity, right? Yeah. One thing I didn't mention, by the way, everything's available at www.nationalopioidsettlement.com. I will certainly have that in the show notes, and we certainly will have this on the good old Pain Guy website, www.paingui.us. We'll have it all available everywhere, right? Specifically within that, for ongoing information, in case it's not your first time going to it, you go to that website, nationalopioidsettlement.com /news for ongoing updates along the way as well, too. Okay? All right, let's jump into the controlled substance portion of things, though. Okay, you know, right off the bat, want to jump into the idea of, you know, what was identified in the National Opioid Settlement as the controlled substances, you know, targeted, you know, for conversation. So there was a limit really to fentanyl, hydrocodone, hydromorphone, methadone, morphine, oxycodone, oxymorphone, and tramadol. Turns out that's not all the prescription opioids, right? You don't need me telling you that. There's actually a longer list of those not included. And again, this isn't going negative or nitpicking or whatever. We always, always want to look at the totality of the situation. So things not mentioned on the list, you know, it's kind of like, oh, the orange book, you know, of DEA controlled substances. Well, if it's not specifically mentioned, then it's not illegal in that particular reference. Here, we want to remember that there's other things like, you know, hydrocodone was on there, but what about benzhydrocodone? What about, buprenorphine? Hello? You know, for both pain management and substance use disorder addiction dosages. Let's see, the list goes on. Butorphanol, codeine, right? Dihydrocodeine, lavorphanol. We don't see much observationally of those last few except for codeine. Piperidine, olaseridine, pentazocin, sufentanil, tapentadol. I mean, tramadol's on the listing here, but tapentadol, right? So, you know, the list isn't all-inclusive is the point. But I wanted to bring that up for everybody here too, because, you know, when implementation goes, we got to remember these things. All right, so big picture. You know, these companies, the pharmacies, we're honing in on here for controlled substance compliance programs, right? They got to have implement and maintain a controlled substance compliance program, CSCP, right? Also, all records have to be retained for at least 3 years. We're used to this in pharmacy. That's kind of light, actually. Usually it's like things like 7 years or more, maybe even a decade. Also, things are electronic anymore. You know, it's just, you know, it's like archiving things instead of deleting them, right? Nothing too huge or new there, but it is stated specifically. In fact, there's got a, you know, companies have to have a controlled substance compliance director and a committee as well in the same respect. And the director must or shall provide at least quarterly reports to the committee, which shall provide written annual reports to company leadership. You're talking C-suite there. So C-suite is going to be getting this information. That's the big picture, right? It's not going to be, there's no brooms and rugs and things like that. All right. So in addition, there's also going to be companies having to maintain and publish, so people know of it, a telephone and all electronic submission hotline, per se, to permit employees And even patients and just the general public to report any suspected inappropriate or illegitimate dispensing, prescribing, or diversion of those designated controlled substances. So, you know, all levels of the teepee have to have opportunity to report things, right? And a record of each complaint has to be kept throughout the terms of the National Opioid Settlement, so 2032. It's a little bit longer, right? All right, so the policies and procedures for the Controlled Substance Compliance Program must be published in a location readily accessible to all pharmacy and compliance personnel at each company or at each pharmacy. Online is sufficient, but it has to be available, okay? So it can be things transparent overall. If we're going to do these things, there's also, they went into the idea of training and testing, right? So there's got to be launch training. And then, of course, you know, initially, then at least every 3 years, okay? And annually, employees have to be, you know, tested on the policies and procedures. So we'll have another one of those, you know, click here as you watch through things, or perhaps live in person or live online. We'll see. But it's got to happen at least in, right? Okay, so that's big picture within the smaller picture of just the controlled substance policies, you know, directors, committees, everything all together. Then, now this is where it gets hot and heavy, okay? For a long, heck, we have a past Pain Pod episode on red flags, controlled substances, or DEA, right? We talk about the colors. We talk about, you know, specific things. We talk about controlled substance concerns even beyond the red flags. But here's an updated version. It's included within the National Opioid Settlement. So we got to touch on that, okay? And we're going to, right here, right now. Be there, be square. You're here. You're not square, right? All right, so big picture for red flags within the National Opioid Settlement. And this is an important one, okay? Let's really digest this one. It is said within the National Opioid Settlement that a red flag shall not be interpreted to mean that a prescription is, or is more likely than not, illegitimate and or not issued in the usual course of professional practice or treatment. So right off the bat, coming in hot. Then the National Opioid Settlement, they're saying, hey, red flags will be there. But it doesn't mean that every red flag means that it is actually like a red stoplight or stop sign of absolutely stop and go, don't go forth with dispensing and so on and so forth. We got to, you know, mitigate the scenarios. But that's an important thing to come in there, too. All right. So how do we resolve things? Well, they even stated that a red flag will be considered resolved after the pharmacist determines that the facts that triggered the red flag do not lead them to believe that the prescription was written for basically our corresponding legal responsibility, the federal regs, for an illegitimate medical purpose or outside the usual course of a prescriber's professional practice. Quite frankly, nothing really changed there. That's been the definition forever, right? All right, so the pharmacy-controlled policies and procedures shall provide that the pharmacist identified red flags must be resolved before filling the prescription. And they must be documented, whether it's a resolution and dispensing or a rejection and a non-dispensing. It's got to be documented and has to be done, right? Basically, what we're saying here is red flag doesn't mean automatically bad apple situation, but every one of them has to be resolved and documented, right? Okay, that's really important. And the records, the documentation has to be kept through the terms of the National Opioid Settlement, at least 2032, okay? All right, so even if all red flags are resolved, a pharmacist shall reject a prescription if, in their professional judgment, that's you and I, they believe that it was written for something other than legitimate medical purpose or outside the course of the individual prescriber's professional practice. So that's kind of the catch at the end, saying that, okay, even if the red flags are resolved and documented, it doesn't mean that the pharmacist must dispense the medication in that case. It also doesn't mean that, you know, it doesn't mean must or must not. It's just saying that, you know, there's things beyond red flags as well. So if there's anything as controlled substance concerns beyond the stated red flags in the National Opioid Settlement, then you know, the decision can still be made by the pharmacist, or shall be made, right? All right. So remember that annual report I talked about that's, you know, required within the National Opioid Settlement. So, you know, what's in it? So pharmacies shall provide to the settling states a report including basically five things and more. But first thing would be the total controlled substance prescription numbers dispensed annually. Okay. Because there's going to be an annual data report that's national and statewide. Top 25 prescribers of those designated controls in each state. List of prescribers that were subject to disclosure, and then red flag identification, specific process, system, metrics, or algorithms. So there's going to need to be a system for all pharmacies along with the documentation, and the total number of prescriptions that pharmacists refuse to dispense. So basically everything that goes on has to be documented and then reported, and that will be reviewed in the annual data report. Okay. Now, by now you're sitting on the edge of the seat, or hey, wherever you are, maybe you're out by the pool or wherever, swimming, ice fishing, depends on what time of year and where you're at, right? What are the red flags? That's what you're wondering, right? Right there with you. So they're put into three buckets within the National Opioid Settlement. There's the patient bucket, that's a bigger one, and then prescription and prescriber. Let's touch on the patient ones first, and they go very granular, okay? There's 11 patient designated red flags within the National Opioid Settlement. So controlled substance class two refills too soon by more than 3 days. Very specific, right? Doctor shopping, which is defined as a controlled substance from more than four previous prescribers of separate practices over 6 months. That's a mouthful, right? But that's doctor shopping. Also, what if the prescriber has more than 10 documented controlled prescription refusals within 6 months? So if it keeps happening more than 10 times, that's a red flag. Previous three other controlled from prescriptions from multiple prescribers with overlapping days within the last month, within the last 30 days. So multiple concerns. Two previous controlled substance prescription refusals within the month, 30 days. Cash pay, we've heard that before. Despite having prescription insurance coverage, it's a red flag. It doesn't mean automatic, remember, but it's a red flag. Just, you know, pause for discussion. At least three patients appear together for the same control. We're wondering if the van is outside coming from another state or something. Remember the pill mill days, right? And then if a patient utilizes slang term medication requests like Xanny bars, Mallinckrodt blues, M's, blue pill, the list goes on. I'm sure you have some too, right? The patient appears visibly altered, intoxicated, or incoherent. Pretty obvious, but we got to mention it, right? And then the last two within the patient red flags in the National Opioid Settlement. We start building the triangle, geography, right? Kind of like Pythagorean theorem or the age old, you know, we have the math problem we all went through back in middle school. The two choo-choos, one's east, one's west, one's going so fast, the other one's going not as fast. Who gets to the train station first? Yeah, hopefully we're not talking about the Yellowstone train station, if you know what I'm talking about there. But, you know, in the big picture, it's a triangle. You got the pharmacy, the prescriber, and the patient. Three different locations. What's the triangle looking like, right? So it is stated specifically in the National Opioid Settlement, the distance between the patient's residence, where the patient lives, and the pharmacy being greater than 50 miles is a red flag. The distance between the patient's residence or home and the prescriber being greater than 100 miles is a red flag. That gets a little bit more because a lot of the times, you know, specialists are involved and there's not that many. You got to drive more, right? And then when you look to within the prescriber red flags, if the prescriber has no office within 50 miles of the pharmacy, that's that third part of the triangle, then that's a red flag, according to the National Opioid Settlement. So in that triangle, we have 50, 50, and 100. What kind of triangle are we looking at, right? Well, in actuality, again, these are red flags, individual, three different individual ones, but we got to apply it to the reality as well too, of like, hey, maybe somebody had to travel 2 hours to get to a specialist and they're driving 70 miles per hour and they're not the choo-choo leaving the station, right? We've got to realize that you know, reality comes into play too. Oh, by the way, what about telehealth, right? I mean, my gosh, you might be three time zones away from your, as a patient, from your prescriber, right? Or mail order pharmacy, right? What about that? These things come into play. It's really important, by the way. So, but big picture, in the National Opioid Settlement, we have a definition on paper, electronically, of 50, 150 as far as the geographical triangle for patient, prescriber, and dispenser. Okay. All right, let's jump into that second bucket of red flags in the National Opioid Settlement for prescriptions. So if the prescription fails to meet law requirements, it's a red flag. Actually, it means that it's illegal. As far as others, misspellings, that's a red flag. Atypical abbreviations, that's a red flag. Multiple colors of ink or multiple handwritings, that's a red flag, according to the National Opioid Settlement. That was all one sentence, right? Lots of commas. But important, any of those things all together in totality, right? All right, final bucket of red flags is prescriber. According to the National Opioid Settlement, a controlled substance class 2, let's say a prescription opioid, and a benzo and carisoprodol is a red flag, that cocktail, right? Now, does that mean that carisoprodol, which, by the way, is banned in Europe, just saying, should it be never used? No. There's a place in care for anything and everyone, anytime, as long as it is appropriate for safety and efficacy, right? But that cocktail, CS2, or we'll say most prescription opioids, benzodiazepine and carisoprodol, that's a red flag, okay? We already mentioned that prescriber and pharmacy being more than 50 miles apart, that's a prescriber red flag in the National Opioid Settlement. And finally, the prescriber utilizes pre-printed or stamped prescription pads. Now, most things are electronic these days, of course. I mean, hey, welcome to this century. But that's basically what the pill mills used to do, right? It's also efficient, both sides of the coin. But those three buckets, patient, prescription, and prescriber, a total of 18 different red flags within the National Opioid Settlement, really important to keep in mind, right? And on the tail end, what about the prescriber reviews? You know, when it's identified that there's a concern with a particular prescriber. So here at the Pain Pod, turns out we got more than pharmacists listening. So this is on the prescribing side, well beyond MDs, DOs, advanced practice folks. We got a lot of folks out there with prescriptive authority and even some pharmacists too with collective practice agreements, so on and so forth. But pharmacies, according to the National Opioid Settlement, shall initiate prescriber reviews in the following circumstances. Got a couple of them. If the pharmacy has implemented a blanket refusal to fill for a given prescriber. Also, if that prescriber has been charged or indicted with a controlled substance prescribing crime. That one's a little bit more straightforward, right? What about if a hotline concern was submitted? Remember that process we talked about 10 minutes ago, right? Also, what if the law enforcement notifies the pharmacy in writing that the prescriber is the target of a controlled substance prescribing investigation? So it's not, there's not a verdict yet, but there's ongoing. And then also in big picture, if the prescriber is flagged for review by the pharmacist or management, and if the prescriber is identified by controlled substance concern algorithms, that's a big one. Those are going to involve those red flags that we just talked about, right? So that's when things start for prescriber reviews. All the documentation for all those reviews and the process have to be kept until 2032, if not longer, electronically, right? When permitted by law, pharmacies are not prevented from immediately blocking a prescriber, according to the National Opioid Settlement, right? Additionally, where are we going with it? If there's no resolution of the prescriber concerns, then the prescriber shall be blocked from having controlled substances filled at the pharmacy when permitted by law. Got to appreciate how they added that in the documentation, right? Prescribers, by the way, have an opportunity at the discretion of the pharmacy to seek future reinstatement by providing information to the pharmacy that may resolve the concerns. Turns out, if in a different realm, if you're speeding on the highway one day, it doesn't mean you're automatically going to a year from now. You might, but it doesn't mean always, right? There's also allowable proactive pharmacy reviews. So there's electronic ones, compliance reviews stated within the National Opioid Settlement. They could be satisfied, with the use of algorithms or a lot of electronic means once developed. It's also site visits, for pharmacy reviews, reviewing of the pharmacy, the operation itself, right? Pharmacies are qualified, even third-party external folks, compliance consultants shall conduct site visits to each pharmacy in a calendar year. So compliance folks within pharmacies have to visit each pharmacy annually. And they got to produce reports that are maintained until at least 2032, because that's what the National Opioid Settlement has as far as its terminology along the way. All right. We've been over a lot, right? Big picture of the dollars, about $45 billion than the opioid, National Opioid Settlement. We went over the, you know, the distributors, manufacturers, and pharmacies. We went over the big picture of the controlled substance processes, committees, directors, and programming overall. Very importantly, we went over the controlled substance red flags within the National Opioid Settlement, which were put into three buckets or columns, you know, for patient, prescription, and prescriber. Lots of bandwidth within them, okay? And then, you know, how things will be proceeding going forward within the information here for the National Opioid Settlement. So I really hope that this helps everyone wrap our heads around all of the information. By the way, when you go to, you know, nationalopioidsettlement.com, feel free to look through the hundreds of pages of information. You could, you know, certainly respect that. Well, yours truly, Pain Guy, you know, went through a lot of that stuff to whittle it down here for you today. But there's a lot of information there, right? A lot of legalese, but what we went over today is just went over those key highlights, should really whittle it down for the mass majority, to help us within helping our communities, our patients, our family, our friends all along the way, right? Because we got to have this type of information to then proceed with the care that we all have. If let's face it, folks, if you didn't care, you wouldn't be listening today to the Pain Pod, right? So a lot of granular information within the National Opioid Settlement. We really honed in on those red flag concerns as a follow-up to the DA Red Flags Pain Pod episode of the past and readily available even today. But we got to put all this information together. So I really want to thank everyone for your time here and listening to the Pain Pod on the Pharmacy Podcast Network. And of course, as always, I wish you a great day. Every day.
If you'd like to join Mark on the Pain Pod, send us an email to publisher at pharmacypodcast.com. And make sure to share the show and subscribe on your favorite podcast directory. Thanks for listening.